Hello, and welcome to Back Issue Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer.
In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about an older comic book storyline.
In this Back Issue Spotlight, James and I will be discussing Red Team number 1-7, originally published by Dynamite Entertainment in 2013. Now, I first came across this property kind of sort of by accident. It was one of those times where we needed some stuff to record, I think it was Drew and I, for the Weekly Comic Spotlight, because I was heading to Comic-Con, we wanted to record it early and stuff. And I think it was Drew who said, hey, there's this thing from Dynamite, it's Red Team, Double Tap, Center Mass, we can get a press copy of it, what about that?
Actually, it was me, because
oh,
I
was
remember
it you?
We did the recording.
My apologies.
Hey, no worries.
I lose track of time, and clearly I lose track of co-hosts. But yeah, so you know this story.
Yeah, and that was my first introduction. I was like, huh, this is really cool.
And yeah, so I read the second, we both, I think, read the second of these arcs before now, where we've read the first and stuff. And I came out of that second one thinking that it had a very primetime police procedural, almost more kind of cable network kind of, I guess, but live action on page feel to it.
It really did. Like you said, it could be primetime TV, or it could even be a gritty movie. I could see that too.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, it would work as that too. But it had a kind of a cinematic feel to it.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that goes to the artist, Craig Cermak, whose style, it's funny because there are a few places where you could almost say, oh, it's a little cartoony or whatever. It's not. It's nuanced, and he's got just a really good sense of body language of the characters kind of acting. And I have a hard time putting my finger on it, but there's something about it that just made it feel like he had cast actors and they were playing the role sort of without cutting into the realism of the story at all.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, because even when I'm like just scrolling through the first issue, and I have it digitally here, you know, some of the screenshots or the camera angles that he's taken, it looks like something you would see on a TV or movie production. You know, every image is zoomed in. Some are kind of tilted a little bit to the side, like an artistic feel to it. Even though he's not a photorealistic and, you know, the artist at all, it's just the angles that he takes. It makes it feel like you're watching something you would see on TV.
Well, and there's an aspect of the script from Garth Ennis and the story being told that has that cinematic TV movie sensibility to it.
Yep, very much so.
You know, when the story starts and we've got this detective, he's clearly in a police interrogation room and they're addressing him as detective. And you're like, well, that can't be good.
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, back on the Cermak, not to sidetrack anything, I was trying to figure out what this guy did. And basically it was these two things, the Double Tap thing, and he did a Voltron thing, but he's going to do the new comic that's coming out, that pirate thing, A Man Among Ye.
Yeah, I'm picking up the first issue based on him doing the art.
Yeah, so I'm picking it up too. So I'm sorry, I didn't mean to sidetrack you.
No, but, no, certainly. Yeah. It's let's give the guy the shout out he's due. He's got new stuff coming out. Let's make sure people are aware of it so they can check it out. I think he's done a fantastic job.
I do too. So I'm very happy. And then they put him with a top-notch writer, because Garth Ennis, when he's on, he's on.
Well, and what got me with this is both, I think, are very talented on their own.
Yeah.
But it seemed very clear they were both telling the same story here.
Very much so. They came together, and the art meshes completely with the story. It's almost perfect for each other. So I was really happy with that. And Garth Ennis is kind of like a writer that I've read some of his stuff, and you can tell if he's into the story or into the material or not. And he's definitely into the story. He's, you know, And also the artist, you can just feel that they were both really focused in, I mean, zeroed in on making this the best they could.
Now, who owns this property?
That I don't know, because I do know that Dynamite does do some creator-owned stuff, I mean, with The Boys and stuff like that. And Garth Ennis holds enough sway that it may be something that Garth Ennis owns.
I think the copyright is for a Spitfire Productions.
Oh, Spitfire. So maybe that's something Garth owns.
I was going to say, maybe it's either something he owns or something he and Craig kind of created for this. I don't know.
Yeah, I really don't know either. Now that I look in the... and what is it called? The Indicia at the front? I see that Spitfire Productions. Yeah.
Because this is clearly something I think they're both passionate about, and it's their story, not something they've been handed and said, hey, go do this. And again, the basic premise... as we start the story, is there's a cop who's being interrogated for deciding him and his team to murder a suspect.
Yeah, and we don't know who's interrogating him. You know it's an interrogation room, and so you don't really get to pick up on who is this, because I kept on thinking through the whole thing, who's interrogating him? And then it immediately drops into why it happened.
Yeah, I thought the lack of reveal until the end of who the interrogator was very clearly intentional.
Yeah.
But in a way where at the beginning, it doesn't kind of matter.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not the interrogator's story, it's this detective's story.
Yeah, and I like how through the different issues, they kind of change the focus. First, you start off with Eddie, who's one of the main characters.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I guess Eddie was on the second issue, too. And then it goes into, like, some certain issues where Trudy's being interrogated.
Trudy was the one interrogated in the second issue.
Okay, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, Trudy's in the second, then it's back to Eddie, then back to Trudy. So you have this kind of, like, back and forth ping pong, but I like that. It's almost like this is the Eddie issue, this is the Trudy issue. And so you're hearing it from both of their perspectives, which is really kind of cool.
Now, it's worth pointing out that this red team for the NYPD has four members.
Yeah.
Two of which are getting interrogated.
Yeah. And so I'm immediately thinking, why, you know, what's going on here? Why are we not getting Duke and George?
I was kind of thinking that, but then I was also, again, having read the second volume first, which I recommend kind of not doing, I wasn't expecting them to be interrogated.
Yeah, that me too. Yeah, spoiler.
But again, we get a little into the interrogation, and then most of the stuff is just flashback to the actual events that are kind of coming out in the interrogation and such. And we bounce back to the interrogation a few times just to kind of reset the scene between issues, and kind of like you would as you go to a commercial break or you come back into another episode of a show or something to set that this is past events, which is why the interrogator knows certain things that, you know, haven't been revealed just yet or something.
Exactly. Yeah, so I really like how they go back and forth. They tell the story. Like I said, very something you'd see on a network production or a movie. And then I like how the characters are introduced. I like how everything's laid out. These are, you know, this is basically like a special ops team for the police. They handle only major crimes. And so they know what police are going to look for. Mm-hmm. And if we are going to murder, how do, you know, you plan the perfect crime, you get the best detectives or the best, you know, police force to, here's what they're going to be looking for, here's what we need to do so they don't pick up that it's us.
Well, and I think the second issue really kind of excelled at that. That's when they laid out their rules for how this was going to work.
Yeah, and I did like the rules.
The rules were good. How they came about them made sense. Why they came about them made sense. And it's the sort of thing that you could either do this as a movie all at once, or that could be kind of that second episode after the pilot of, okay, we're going down this path. And it would give you the first issue is that nice dramatic, okay, we've got cops, but maybe they're not the good guys. And then, again, here are the rules, and you can kind of see how they're formalizing what they had just kind of done in that first issue.
Exactly. Like I could see this being made as, you know, like you said, a movie, TV, or a Netflix thing, and this, like, first seven issues being the first seven series, and here's what we're dealing with this team. Here's the next book that comes out, or the next, you know, installment that you can, you know, go through, and this one maybe six or seven episodes of watching this crime and how this goes on. But I think it was really cool, and I really like the characters that are in here. He fleshes them out very well,
mm-hmm.
and humanizes them so that you start to care, especially about, well, I actually started to care about all of them, I would say.
You certainly got to know all of them fairly well, and how, you know, what role they play in the team, who's kind of in charge, who's kind of the newer one, who's trying to prove themselves, who's not, and how they interact and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's funny because the first issue, there was a huge info dump there to set up the story.
Yeah.
But it was kind of needed because we're introduced to this team. They've been on this case for like 2 years trying to chase this one guy down. Things aren't going well. There's a lot we need to know to understand the situation they're in.
Exactly.
So the info dump, I think, was unavoidable.
No, you have to do that to set it all up. So it kind of frames everything around that. And I like that the first murder, let's go ahead and say, of this guy named Clinton, I like how that was really detailed and how it all played out, because some of the later murders, it went a little bit quicker. But I like how they really let it play out and how easy it was for him. That was really kind of, I like how they made that cool and frightening at the same time.
Yeah, the only issue I had with that first kind of victim of this team was his name.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Clinton Days.
Yeah, it was kind of weird.
It was really weird because the font is all uppercase, as is common with comics.
Yeah.
Okay, so there were a couple of times I was wondering, did I just misparse that? Because, you know, there was a line of, and was lining things up nicely with Clinton Days.
Yeah.
Which, if you misread it, could be, and was lining things up nicely with the Clinton Days, you know, like back when Clinton was president.
It's funny you say that, because that's how I read it one of the times. So I was like, what? And then I was like, oh, yeah.
It's exactly how I read it at first until I realized that. And there, I think in issue 2, there's a reference to the Days shooting.
Yeah.
And there's the Days last name shooting, okay, the shooting of this guy, or the Days shooting, like today's shooting, yesterday's shooting, whatever. Ever.
Yeah, I did not care for the first name, but it is the last name. Yeah, I should say the first victim.
The first victim. Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't care for that either because it threw me for a loop.
It's a nitpick, and it's something that would not have changed the story whatsoever to have just found a name that was harder to misparse or something.
Exactly. Something just a little bit different, especially for the last name.
Yeah. But that's the kind of thing that, you know, I'm sure Garth Ennis never even considered that I would read it wrong that way.
Yeah, probably.
But he should have. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, son of a gun.
But it was interesting how well that went, why that worried Eddie that it went so well. But I was surprised that this first issue kind of wrapped up that death. And it's like, okay, there's going to be more to follow. And I'm like, I was expecting the whole 7 issues would kind of focus on the plan to kill this one guy, all of that, and it would take a while to play out because that's standard storytelling.
Me too. It decompressed. Like, you would expect this one, we're going to make a hit. But no, this is the one first murder that's setting up to why they decided to take out the worst of the worst, who are basically dodging the justice system.
Well, and I thought it was a really smart decision to go this way, because while in some of the other issues they maybe gloss over the murder a little bit because there's other stuff going on, enough happens every issue. It feels like episodes of a serial narrative, not chapters of one story.
I would agree. Yeah, so it definitely does, and I have a feeling that we're going to see this. This won't be the last we see of the property here in the comic form. And the reason why I say that is because we just saw the boys go to Amazon. And I'm sure so Garth has a connection with people who have produced things. And since it's owned by this, whatever that name was, that production company.
Spitfire Productions, I think.
Spitfire. I could see him, he's parsing this out and coming up with several stories for this team so that he can approach an Amazon or a Netflix, probably Amazon since he has the relationship. And hey, here's the next thing I'm working on.
Well, I mean, this would fit on Amazon, it would fit on Netflix, HBO, there's a ton of places it would work.
Exactly, and I would be really interested in watching it because it kept me entertained.
Now, one of the other things I kind of liked, and it was not a big deal of the story, but it was well done, was the introduction of, first off, Dwyer as the leader of that other team, but the whole Tim Williams subplot that was kind of introduced when we first see Dwyer and stuff in this first issue.
Yeah, I like that too.
And it's basically, this is a guy who's made some mistakes, and in the second issue, I guess we see the article in the photo, which just totally destroys that guy's career as a cop.
Exactly, so he is done. You know, stick a fork in him, he's done.
And he was a guy who wasn't going to have a great career anyways. He was already kind of not well thought of by the cops, and he's one of them. That's not good. But, you know, that progresses through later issues. We see him confronting George of the Red Team in issue 5. We see his funeral in issue 6. So it's something that builds out this world and gives it a little bit, I don't say more realism, but a little more depth.
It does. It gives it a lot of depth. Like I said, like we were talking about, these characters are very fleshed out. The main characters on Red Team, you know, Trudy, Duke, George, Eddie. But even the side characters, O'Dwyer and all of them, we learn about their backstory. We learn a little bit about them. They keep reappearing to where you really feel like you know the character. So many times in comics, a character or a person is introduced and they have their little scene in that issue and we never see them again. Here, the characters, when they're introduced, it's for a reason. And so they play an integral part to the story and where it's going.
But it's also done in a way that it feels like they could just be, oh, that's the other team in the precinct or whatever. So, of course, they're going to bump into him in the hallway or whatever. It's just another cop. You know, it's while they play into the story big time, it feels like if you look at almost any kind of classic cop TV show, you look at Chips, there's the other cops or other, you know, highway patrol officers. You look at SWAT, there's the lead team and then there's the other team they work with from time to time. Yep. You know, the rivalry, stuff like that. So it feels authentic as just part of the kind of genre or the franchise or whatever. But then the way these things build into the story and stuff, it's like, okay, I didn't really see some of it coming, but I wasn't really looking for it either. And it didn't feel like, well, that came out of nowhere. No, it's like, okay, that makes sense. I get it. You built up to it. It was fair.
Exactly. It was fair. And it's almost like Garth would be a great gambler, I think. Because he gives you enough to where you think you see and you understand, but he doesn't reveal his hand. And later on, when it comes up later on, I didn't, like you said, I didn't see it coming and I was surprised time and again. But the surprise is, it wasn't that he tricked me. It's that he gave me enough material. I'm just viewing it from this angle. I'm viewing it from this person's perspective and this person's perspective. And we're seeing the little pieces come into play here and there. And the big picture we reveal later on. And we're like, oh, that's how this is all playing out. Wow.
Well, there's an art to telling a good story. And it's a little like magic. There's some sleight of hand, some misdirection and stuff like that. But everything's out there on stage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this was a story that was well done. We're getting the setup for Eddie eventually kind of falling for Trudy and stuff. And I don't want to say where that leads, but it paid off in an interesting way there at the end, I thought.
Me too.
The whole bit with O'Dwyer, with Williams and stuff like that. There's a lot going on outside of just this team is going and murdering suspects.
Yeah, there's a lot more to the world, and it pays off. Everything you read in here, there's a payoff for it at the end.
Yeah, it's a well-done story, and, you know, when I got done with the issue 2, I'm like, oh, another issue, another dead criminal. I'm seeing a trend here.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they said flat out, we're going to do it again.
Yeah, exactly. And I did like, okay, the first 2 issues, it felt a little bit, okay, this is going to happen, and so I'm expecting the exact same thing in the 3rd issue, and I'm like, okay, this is just the thing we're going down. And the 3rd issue, you know, starts off, but it does take it in a different direction because different members of the team were kind of setting up targets for different reasons. And they don't want to, you know, make it look coordinated. They want to make things look natural. They want people who are basically really bad and hurting society, but are able to elude justice. And I thought it was really interesting. It's a 3rd issue where Eddie picks, right?
Yeah, Eddie picks the priest.
Yeah, the priest. And that tied in a lot to, I think, Garth Ennis as a person, but it also made him break the rules a little bit, which I found kind of interesting.
Well, issue 2, they set up the rules. Issue 3, Eddie's still not totally on board, so for him to say, yeah, let's this is the target or whatever, kind of shows his commitment. We needed that.
Yeah.
But then also, as soon as they've established the rules, yeah, they start to break them.
Yeah, immediately, which I was like, oh, okay.
And I think they break it even further in the 4th issue when Trudy kills a guy.
Yeah, very much so.
And that was very different because it was kind of unplanned. It just sort of happened or whatever. It also plays up the fracturing partnership between Eddie and Trudy.
Yep.
From the 3rd issue and stuff. And there was aspects of that guy getting killed in issue 4 that I was expecting to come up again later.
Yeah, me too.
And they didn't, and I don't remember if it ever showed up in the next volume or not.
I don't think it did, but I think that was probably, yeah, that was unexpected, and it was brutal. There's real brutality in here, almost. Did you watch the Netflix Daredevil series?
I did. Well, I haven't watched the final season. I did, and I thought particularly the first 5 episodes.
Yeah.
That was beyond brutal and gory, and they ramped it back after that, and it was still violent.
Yeah.
But there were some times where it's like, come on, this is just gratuitous.
Yeah, that and Punisher, it was just like, wow, okay, we're going basically the black label of this stuff. And that's kind of what we get in here. I mean, I wouldn't say it was wrong or a mischaracterization of maybe how a character would out. It felt true and it felt real, but there's real brutality in here. I was just like, oh my gosh.
There was some definite brutality there, and I thought in issue 5, that's where things got kind of gory and explicit and very much in kind of that Netflix, you know, uber-violent from the, again, Daredevil Punisher sort of a way.
Yeah, I agree.
That's when they take out the other team takes out some hoods or whatever. And it's like, this is not just, okay, the thugs are getting mowed down, but then they're getting literally butchered.
Yeah, which was completely disgusting. I mean, there's some like kind of sex scenes, but not really a sex scene in there, and someone being killed during that, and then you have literally machetes being pulled out and let's chop them up type thing. I was just like, wow, this is something that can only be shown on a mature audience. You know, don't let your kids watch this. This is not something for kids.
Yeah, I think there's a way that it could be shot where it was clear what was happening, but you never really see it.
Yeah, like if you see guys with machetes and you hear thud, 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 you know, if they're whacking a piece of meat off camera just to make the sound,
or you
but they don't show it.
Go from the I forget if they were going through binoculars or a scope or whatever. If you cut from out of that to just a shot from a distance of the window and you see, you know, it's getting progressively splattered with red.
Yeah, splattered with red, and maybe the person who was looking through the binoculars feeling sick.
Yeah. That's yeah, the gratuitous they turn and they vomit sort of thing.
Yeah, that would be perfect.
And it was, I think, issue 5 around the time that we started to get clues that George and Duke probably didn't survive the events of the story, because at this point we haven't seen them being interrogated, and yeah. Eddie's like, I think we've both told you this a couple of times to the interrogator. It's like, well, yeah. He said something, Trudy said something.
Where are George and Duke?
They haven't been saying anything. Doesn't look good for them.
Exactly. So it's kind of telegraphed, but not telegraphed, because you're thinking maybe these two are getting interrogated and the other ones are already locked up. But I mean, there's a little ambiguity, but you kind of know what happened.
Well, and again, we're a ways into the story, and things were being set up to where not everything could always go as smoothly as that first murder.
Exactly.
So I think the slow reveal of information and stuff, that was a clue we needed before we got to issue 6, where we actually get, you know, I think find out what happens to George and Duke.
Yeah, issue 6 was really good. And it starts off with Williams, you know, basically the funeral. And I guess he had killed himself at that point.
We're at least led to believe he killed himself.
That's what we're led to believe, yeah.
Yeah, that's what everyone thinks at the very least.
Yeah.
The captions at that point, it took me a little bit to realize that was Trudy during the interrogation ranting about this guy. And man, it did not paint a good picture of him or his family.
Yeah, I agree. So that was really – and this is also where you get to realize, okay, Red Team is good. They're the best of the best. But the other team – and I can't – did they – name their team? I don't think they did.
I don't think the other team got a name.
Okay, yeah, just I call them the Dwyer's team, because I didn't see a name or anything. I realize they're just as good. They're kind of like a special group, but you realize how good O'Dwyer is when they meet at the funeral.
We got something, and I forget which issue it was in, where the captain is talking to, I guess it was Duke, about how he gave O'Dwyer permission to go look into the Clinton Days murder. Because, one, it'll keep the guy busy. Two, the Red Team's still in the doghouse, so, you know, their competition, it'll slow them down, so he can get the Red Team out of the doghouse with the higher-ups.
Yeah.
But also, how O'Dwyer, he's not really a detecting detective. He's a beat-them-up sort of detective.
Yeah, exactly. He's a guy who takes action.
He's the sledgehammer, Red Team is the scalpel.
Yes.
And I forget if they used that exact phrasing or whatever, but it was very clear that while both have good records for getting results, the captain at least realizes there's some fundamental differences between these two groups.
Exactly. You send this one, like you said, as a scalpel, the other one is a sledgehammer, or, you know, one's a bomber and one's a precision missile strike. So, yeah, and I just really like that when just the facial expressions at the funeral, when O'Dwyer and Duke come face to face, and just the handshake, and how you realize how everything went wrong just from that.
Yeah. Well, and we'd gotten some stuff earlier about how O'Dwyer is really good at reading people.
Yeah. He can read you. He's the ultimate poker player.
Kind of, you mess up, he's gonna know.
Yeah.
And then when we get to that point, and I guess it was Duke who messed up, he's like, man, I messed up, and yep, okay.
Yeah, and what's funny is Duke's at a certain level, and O'Dwyer is, that they realize O'Dwyer's kind of gives the smirk, I got you. And, you know, like, poor guy like Eddie's like, what happened? Trudy would say that, just from that, like, what's going on? They basically shook hands and nothing happened, but that's all they needed.
That's something that I think might have played out better on film.
Yeah, I agree. You need that subtlety, actually seeing the smirk go up, just going up and see him not reach to shake the hand initially, and then slowly do it, and then see the other guy smirk like, I gotcha.
We do have that one panel where the hand is out and Duke's pausing.
Yeah.
So I think Craig did a fine job conveying that.
It's just the motion would be better.
Exactly. Not having the motion, the timing and stuff like that. It's something that with the right two actors,
it could come off really good.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because when I'm looking at the art, the first time you read it until you get to that page, I'm like, okay, here he's coming up to shake, and he's just turning around looking at him. He sees him, and then he shakes his hand. But it's got to be that subtle pause, you know, like, and that's all it took.
And the thing is, if they had had another panel with him pausing, it would have been too much.
Too much, exactly. So there's only so much, there's good and bad about the comic book medium, and motion is one of the things that's kind of hard to do sometimes. And I'm not saying he did bad with the art, it's just it's limited what you can do. So that little interaction will play out better in film.
Yeah. It played out well here.
Yeah.
But it's the kind of thing that is challenging to do in stagnant, you know, images on paper.
Yeah.
Versus really good delivery with some talented actors and the right editing of the scene.
And he did it well. And then the director comes in, basically being Ennis, and explains it very well so that we go, ah, that's what happened. Okay, cool. Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah. That next page where, you know, Trudy and Eddie are like, what are you worrying about? You know, kind of a thing. It's doing it immediately after the scene, so it's not like we're waiting or whatever. It clues anyone in who missed it. Oh, okay.
Exactly.
So, again, there's some elegance to the storytelling here that I think is often missed, because some other writers would have said, oh, they saw the smirk, they figured it out, they're smart, and maybe we would have, maybe we wouldn't have. And this
exactly.
was in a way that explaining it to the other characters doesn't make us feel dumb.
Yeah, because sometimes I miss things, you know, or maybe you miss things.
Mm-hmm.
And he explained it in a way where the characters missed it, so I'm not the moron. And I appreciate that, because every now and then I like a little hand-holding every now and then.
Yeah, yeah. And it was one of those things that it was done well and can make or break a story.
I would agree, because that's the pivotal point that changes the whole trajectory of what we've been reading. Because up until now, it's you know, set up a murder. They're getting a little sloppier. I would say a little bit sloppier as they move along, because it gets easier and easier. And I think if you're a perfectionist and you're the type of person where you're like, cross the T's, dot the I's, cross the T's, dot the I, you'll get a little bit tired at some time, or you'll make a little slip. You'll make a little slip up. And once you make one little slip up and everything's okay, it's okay to slip a little bit more. And so that kind of happens, a natural progression. And so that's kind of cool. I like that.
And at this point, they know O'Dwyer was one of the militant guys who had butchered the thugs or whatever.
Yeah, they're just like us. Except a little more brutal. A
lot more brutal.
Yeah, a lot more brutal. I mean, Trudy had some brutality, but it was nothing compared to those guys.
Yeah, yeah. And then in that last issue, we finally get the reveal of who was doing the interrogation.
Yeah.
I thought waiting that long made sense. Actually, before we get to that, in the sixth issue, we see what happens with George and Duke. Things are looking bad for Eddie and Trudy, to where we set up that grand finale of this miniseries and such.
Yeah.
So we're ending on a, you know, we know not everybody's going to make it out alive, but is anyone going to make it out alive is kind of the question.
Yeah, because I like how that was set up. We know Trudy survives because she's getting interviewed, but to see that flash and to see her take the shot initially, you're like, oh no. And then you see that happen with, I'm trying to remember his name, George.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, that's what happened to George. Oh no.
I mean, we know Trudy and Eddie survive. Because they're being interrogated. But, you know, we don't know what else happens. And we know they're not going to have an easy time of it.
Exactly.
You know, this isn't one of those situations where they know they're being interrogated later, so they can just walk out into the hail of bullets unworried. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah. And actually, I really kind of... every fight scene in here, I mean, they were brutal, they were meaningful, some of them were impactful, some of them were just over the top, but I wouldn't say out of character for what we're seeing and the people we're dealing with. But I mean, you know, even with that thing with Duke trying to help George and just being, you know, shot to bits, it's like gut-wrenching when you see it happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, I mean, I liked how this all played out, but it was like, man, okay, how do we get out of this?
Yeah, how do they resolve this?
Yeah, because they're put into a position where you don't know if they can get out of it.
Yeah, because, well, they've been doing wrong the entire time.
Yeah.
You know, they've got another team literally hunting them down. And I think they'd already established we can't just call for help with the cops because we've been killing people. That, you know, it's kind of mutually assured destruction sort of a situation at that point.
Yeah. Two teams enter, one team leaves. And not all the players necessarily on each team are going to make it out. So, I mean, yeah, they're going at each other hard. And that scene, I was like, okay, Red Team was prepared, but O'Dwyer's team was more prepared.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I thought these guys were the best, but maybe they weren't. Maybe O'Dwyer had them, you know, was prepared a little bit more.
I think it was more a matter of they underestimated O'Dwyer.
They did, yeah.
They thought he was a little stupider, a little more hungry to you know, get them, and they gave too obvious of a you know, lead for the guy. And he's like, hey, somebody's handing me exactly what I need out in the middle of nowhere right when I need it. Yeah, this is a setup.
Yeah, something. Yeah, that he's like, it's too obvious. I'm not stupid.
Yeah. So when we open on that last issue with both of them in the interrogation room, it's like, okay, now we know we're wrapping stuff up. They get to talk to each other and stuff. And this is where we get the reveal of who's been doing the interrogation and stuff. And I felt waiting till this point made sense because it was one of the missing pieces of the story that we didn't realize was missing up until now of how they get out of all of this really is dependent on who they've been talking to the whole time.
Exactly, because this whole time I was starting to think, okay, FBI has them or something like that. And with the reveal here, it actually made me go back and look at some of the interactions with the captain going all the way back to the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of cool, but this is the guy who really, to fix things, he can fix things.
Yeah, yeah. And he realizes, well, this group, the Red Team, has been doing bad stuff. They've been, I don't want to say doing it for the right reason, but at least a more right reason than just making money.
Yeah. If you had a captain or someone higher up who was maybe not 100% clean, you know, a little bit corrupt, and but they're taking out the people that you can't get, you know, the John Gotti or whatever, you know, the Teflon Don or whoever it was that they're – someone who's really hurting society, you know, mm-hmm. in the drug trade or human trafficking or whatever, and we can't get this guy. We can't get this guy. We can't get this guy. And you have someone takes him out and you can do something about it. It's the kind of situation where that type of guy, maybe he's going to look the other way.
And again, we are not endorsing this for real world behavior, but in no. fictional stories.
Fictional stories. Yeah. Real world. We do not want this to happen.
But this was one of those things that when we got to this point in the story, it's like, oh, this is who they're talking to. This is a game changer.
Exactly. It completely changed it. Because up until then, I was thinking, man, they're probably getting interrogated by the FBI.
I was thinking internal affairs.
Or internal affairs, yeah. That would be it.
But when it came to the captain here, and it's like his two teams have just basically mowed each other down with their police issue firearms and stuff like this. He's in a bit of a hot water himself.
Exactly. And, you know, there is a lot of action in this issue because they're showing the fight and how the two of them get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can almost go blow by blow, and it's brutal, good, amazing action sequence, seeing the, you know, people suffer and how they get out of it. But I think it was really powerful at the end when the captain's talking to him and they're basically, you know, you're letting us go type thing. And he's like, well, you know, I could either have them be the scum of the earth and their death and you two in prison, or we can let them go out as heroes. And basically, you know, there'll be something for their spouses. You know, I'm sure they have life insurance mm-hmm. and things like that. And you two, we can still have a red team going forward. And you guys get decorated.
It was believable as to how that came to be in terms of yeah. the resolution. What I really loved was actually just before that, when mm-hmm. Eddie was kind of recapping the rules from issue 2.
Oh, that was powerful. Thanks for bringing that up. Yeah, that was awesome when he's sitting there with O'Dwyer, who's basically been wounded, shot through shoulder to shoulder sideways, through the chest.
And he's bleeding out and stuff. Eddie's pretty badly hurt, and he's like, okay, what was number one again? And then just goes through the whole thing. And it was violent, it was gory, but it was effective storytelling.
Yeah. Those rules, should we say what they were?
I think people should read the story to find out.
Okay, it was kind of cool. I loved how that played out. That was so powerful. That was probably – that and the very ending were two of the most powerful moments of the book, I think.
I think so, because we had that – again, when the captain's talking to them of here's how we're going to lay it all out and you guys get off – I don't say scot-free, but – and why. It's like, okay, it was talking heads, it was exposition, but it worked.
Yeah.
And then we get to the drinks there at the end.
Yeah.
And that last page, you know, when it's like, this story is not over.
Yeah. It's like, is it going to end up like a love story? You start seeing, you know, speaking of us.
Well, what I got out of that is Eddie kind of really wants no part of what Trudy is suggesting.
Yeah, I agree.
But he can't let her do it alone.
Because he cares for her.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Exactly. So it's kind of like he's being pulled along. It's an unwilling but yet willing participant.
Yeah. The fact they got kind of a happy ending and now they're clearly going to go ruin it, you know. It makes me want to reread the Double Tap Center Mass story.
Me too. And it also makes me think because they came out with those nice little omnibus of the boys and stuff like that Garth Ennis, he keeps going back to these properties from time to time, you know, writing a story here, writing a story there. I wouldn't be surprised if he has another Red Team story that comes out, you know, when the market's a little bit better for comics, you know, because the economy and what's going on now. But eventually, I think this will be collected, probably a hardcover or a big oversized softcover with like three or four of these, you know, series tied together. And I would just love to read that back to back because I think the stories read better when you read them back to back because spaced out a month, I bought that Red Team Double Tap.
Mm-hmm.
And you forget a little bit of stuff that happens. Maybe the cliffhanger, if you didn't want to go back and look, you may, it just flows a little bit better when you're reading it all together.
Well, yeah, because I think this is a different storytelling style than a lot of comics use these days.
Yeah.
Each issue has a complete chunk of story with a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Yeah.
Usually in this case of some particular criminal who's about to meet his end, thanks to the Red Team. And again, it's got that police procedural TV show, you know, cable TV show kind of a vibe. But it's got a really nice mix of a story that's going throughout the seven issues here, and each issue having enough of beginning, middle, and end in and of itself to feel complete.
Yeah.
And to be bigger building blocks for the seven issue story.
I would agree. I agree with everything you said.
Because typically, your average comic, we would not have gotten this much in this many issues, and it would have, the story momentum for a typical comic is poor because so little happens in 20 pages. You get three or four scenes, and then a month, you get the next couple, a month, the next couple. 6 months later, almost got a story. Here, there's so much momentum going in that having that month between, because I did the same thing with Double Tap Center Mass, the second volume, you could forget stuff, but it's like, again, you've had that week between TV episodes, and while there's the ongoing arc, it's not like everything in the last issue is utterly important to have memorized for this next issue.
Exactly.
I feel the second volume was a little more serial, a little less episodic than this, but I'd have to reread it. I don't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, I agree. It felt different than this one. This one, which one did you enjoy more? I think I enjoyed the first one a little bit more, even though I did enjoy the second one a lot.
You know, that's a hard one. I think this, having read it just now and the other one a while back, I gotta say I felt this was better, but
it's hard to remember because that was like probably like a year and a half ago that we read that.
At least a year ago.
Yeah, maybe
probably two.
Yeah. And my memory is not great, but I remember some of the stuff that happened. But I do need to reread that again because this is good stuff. Garth Ennis, he's known for his horror books, but police procedurals, he's done really good. And what's interesting is I'm not a fan of this genre typically. You know, there was so many cop shows on TV that sometimes they're overdone. I'm like, okay, I don't need another one. But when they're done well, I really enjoy it. And this was done really, really well.
Well, the thing is, when I watch police procedurals on TV, it's usually the how do they figure out who done it or the mystery aspect of it.
Yeah.
Which admittedly on primetime TV shows, not that great.
Yeah.
Whereas here, it was not particularly a mystery story. It was a character story, an action adventure story with ramifications or whatever. It's not like we were never trying to figure out who killed somebody or, you know, is this guy really guilty or not? No, we know he's guilty. They're going to kill him. That's that.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a different feel than a lot of police procedurals, even though it's got the same trappings.
Exactly. We almost know where the story's headed because of the interrogation and the characters we see. We know what's going to happen. It's how did we get here? And how do we see these characters again? How did this, does it end in a satisfying way? And I was like, wow, it did. And what's weird is not everything was satisfying, you know, as far as like it's a happy ending for everyone. I would say it's probably a realistic ending. Not really a happy ending, but at the same time, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think it was well done. I think it's better to read in one sitting than, you know, a month between issues.
Yeah.
But that's just because I think it's a deeper, better story than a lot of comics are telling these days.
I would agree. And this is a comic that I would have no problem saying if you're not squeamish, you know, as far as violence goes and stuff like that. This is something, and you are squeamish with violence. It's worth it to read it. People should read this book.
Yeah, I am definitely on the squeamish side. There was a few places, particularly when the gang was getting mowed down or whatever, and certainly in the last two issues, where it was definitely violent and gory and stuff, but there was enough solid story being told, and it didn't feel like it was gratuitous or making it seem like the violence is a good thing or something like that.
Yeah, I would agree.
So it was, would I have been happier without that aspect? If they could have told the story effectively without it, sure. And I think they could have. I think it would have been a little more challenging, but it was one that this is a really solid property. I definitely recommend both volumes.
Me too.
And on the one hand, I'd love to see this as a TV show or movie. On the other hand, squeamish as I am, if they were to go to the levels they did here in live action, that might be a little tough for me.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, even some of the stuff, I mean, that happened with Trudy in the bathroom with that guy. Mm-hmm. Even the guy's a grade-A jerk, and he's basically trying to, you know, rape a woman at one point. And you feel like he gets his just desserts. It's the way it just plays out. It's like, oh, you know, it's like, wow, that's rough.
Yeah.
It's really good. I'm completely on board if they come out with a TV show on this. I'm hoping that he revisits the property again in the future. And if we were rating back issues, this is something that's like AA plus material for the two different volumes, because he writes it so well. It's drawn with the facial expression so well. Like, it's just really good. And there was so much of an info dump at the beginning. It starts off a little bit slow, I would say, but at the same time, you need that information to build the story.
Yeah, there's definitely an aspect of a lot of setup at the beginning, but I felt we also got a lot of payoff at the end, so I was okay with it.
Yeah.
I also want to call out Adriano Lucas, the colorist.
Oh, yeah.
Did a terrific job throughout.
I agree. I'm looking at the color art right now, and I really enjoy it.
There's definitely some shadow. It gives it some three-dimensionality to it. I think it really helps the story and never gets in the way.
It never does. And, I mean, just it sets the tone, you know, from them being interrogated, having that kind of dull, drab, bluish color to where, you know, they're having a good time maybe eating dinner and you see these bright red and orange palettes to the way he uses it in the shadows, it does a really good job.
Yeah, he gives it a cinematography aspect to it.
Yeah, and they do that in cinema, you know. They change the filters on the camera and give it a different tone, and it gives you a different feeling. You know when something bad's going to happen. They're kind of telegraphing it to you.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely fun stuff. Highly recommend it. Glad we finally got around to this, because I think we'd been talking about it since we'd read the first one.
Me too. And I'm glad we read it too. And like I said, if they come out with like a hardcover collecting it all, or a softcover collecting all the volumes, and I know they will eventually, I'll definitely pick it up.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said, definitely recommend this.
Hey, quick question. When we were picking things to review this, you had recommend you had mentioned this, and I'd forgotten all about it. I was like, oh yeah, that'd be a good one. Had you already read this before we reviewed it, or did you just read it this time?
I just read it this time. I had gotten
Me too.
I think I'd gone to mycomicshop.com or something like that at some point and picked it up.
Yeah.
So
and I think you said I could be talked into review a Red Team by Garth Ennis. I was like, oh, that wouldn't be bad. Yeah, that's a good suggestion.
It had been sitting on my stack to read, because I've got a bunch of things that I've considered at some point, yeah, maybe do a back issue spotlight on it or something like that. And this was definitely one of them, because I knew from the second volume it was going to be a solid story.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
And again, there's an aspect of the writing that just nails the genre and is just good writing, and there's something about the art that makes it feel like, you know, almost storyboards for a TV show.
I agree. And one thing I would say to people who are listening is one of the people who's the biggest fan of Garth Ennis is Eric from Cowabunga.
Mm-hmm.
He had Garth in his shop doing a signing before, and so he has everything that Garth Ennis has done, it seems like. So literally, if you message him on the Slack, I guarantee you he probably has trades of this thing, or he can get them for you pretty inexpensively.
Yeah, I would think so. Absolutely. Again, it's fun stuff.
Yeah, really fun. And like I said, for something to not be in my wheelhouse and for me to be like, man, this is good, you know it's good material.
Well, it's funny because I'm mainly a, you know, superhero fan, sci-fi and stuff. It's not like I get too heavy into the kind of the crime genre, if you will. But this was well done. And imagine how interesting this story could have been if it had been set in Gotham City.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because then there's the looming, what happens if this group goes up against the Batman?
Yeah, true.
I mean, if they could tell a Gotham PD story or set of stories that was somewhere that had an aspect of the Gotham Central stuff that Greg Rucka and who else was the other writer?
I can't remember.
I want to say Brian K. Vaughan. No, I'm wrong. I don't remember. Anyways, Rucka was one of them, and it was good police procedural, you know, detective type stuff. And then have Garth Ennis doing, okay, here's the Goon Squad section of the Gotham PD. Here's the ones that give him the bad name and stuff.
Yeah.
That could be fun. But again, this being its own self-contained property, loved it.
A lot of fun. And I'm excited to see it come out, because I have a feeling that we'll be seeing this one day on the big screen. You know, whether it's the big screen in my house, which I do have like an 80-inch TV, or in the movie theater.
Oh, yeah. At some point, this is going to get pulled for an adaptation. The fact that this was done in 2013 and, you know, here we are many, many years later and it still hasn't been surprises me.
Surprises me, too, because it's written so well. So
yeah.
I'm happy. I'm glad you picked this. Thank you.
I think the only challenge to this would be casting.
Yeah. You got to get the right people.
And the only one I really gave some thought to would be who would play Eddie. And Lucas Bryant from Haven.
Oh, yeah.
Is the
I
one
can
that
see
came
that.
To mind.
And O'Dwyer, I'm like, O'Dwyer, you got to get him right, too. And I don't know who I would pick for O'Dwyer. I have no clue. But the characters in here, I want to see them look like they look in the comic. So who knows?
I want to see them look like they look in the comic. I want to see them act like they act in the comic.
Yeah, and I want the same thing.
I think it can be done.
Me, too. I want to see it. So this has now become a mission of mine. We got to start emailing or get into contact with Garth. Let's make this happen.
Yeah, yeah, because it's clearly within our power.
Like he's just sitting there wasting his time.
Yeah, totally, totally. So we've gotten a few weeks of new comic shipments. Did you get much? Did you see anything interesting?
I did get some stuff, and I did have some things that were interesting. I got my stack sitting here, actually. The only thing that I haven't read from my last shipment was the Venom comic. It was like an oversized one. I'm reading that probably tonight or tomorrow morning. We'll see. But I did enjoy there's a new one from Oni that came out, Rogue Planet by Cullen Bunn. That was kind of fun. I did get my last E100-page giant. It was the R Fighting Forces. I liked that. And there was an issue, too, of Mercy from Mirka Andolfo from Image. I had a lot of fun with that. And then I was super happy to see Marauders come back. Did you get Marauders?
I did.
I really enjoyed it. Did you like it?
I liked it. It was good.
Yeah. So, I mean, there were some different things that I did like, some things that were just kind of like so-so. I felt like my first shipment I liked a little bit more, but there were some in here. Oh, one thing I did like, there was Dead Day that came out from Aftershock and Disaster Inc. from Aftershock, which were two new number ones, and they both read really well, so I enjoyed both of those.
Yeah, for me, I didn't get much on that first week of releases.
That was kind of slim.
Yeah, for me, it was, I think it was a Doctor Who, a Justice League, and a Jimmy Olsen.
Yeah, that's pretty limited. Jimmy Olsen.
I got the second Shazam hardcover, so there's that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true. I did get some omnibus that I ordered. Some DC omnibus came in. I got a couple of those. They came in on Monday.
Cool. It's been weird because that first week was so small, and then that second week there was
a little bit bigger.
It was about 15 comics for me, so definitely bigger. Of course, it doesn't take much to be bigger than 3 comics. But there was another issue of Justice League. It's like, didn't I just get one last week?
Yeah, that's the way I felt.
There were 2 issues of Flash, you know, and then
that was weird.
Yeah, because they'd been releasing stuff through other channels and such, and I get why they had to kind of catch up on the Diamond side, but it's weird to be getting kind of the fast forward on some of the DC titles and the slow roll on the Marvel titles.
Very weird, because I was the same way. I got like 2 Flash, the 2 Justice Leagues, and I was just like, it's kind of odd, but I think it'll start evening out now. But Marvel's still doing a very slow roll, and both Marvel and DC have canceled a lot of stuff, moved some stuff to digital. I think they're really kind of testing to see what the market can handle, what the shops can handle right now.
Yeah, I definitely think they're rethinking, you know, how much the market can bear, and I think because I was talking to Eric the other night on the Comics Blackout episode, which as we record this goes up tomorrow. As this gets released, it was last Friday. There's some stuff that Marvel in particular was like, we need to slow down the release of our stuff. We've got so many things that to get some of it out, it would be, you know, 6 months from now. So that doesn't really seem right either, which is why they're taking some of it to digital only.
Yeah. Very much so. And well, one thing that happened that was kind of weird, I was asking Eric before I sent him my last order form. I can't remember which order form that was, the last one that you and I had to send in. And I was like, hey, I'm looking at these Marvel Omnibus. There's so many of them. There's like 6 of them. And I'm looking at these. And he's like, well, don't order any of them. I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, they're not going to even allow me a space to input that order because they're like 6 Omnibus. You know, the stores can't handle it. A lot of shops aren't open. And so they're not canceling them. They'll put one here, maybe a few months down the road, then, you know, sprinkle out another one here. They're just, I think they're worried about driving people into bankruptcy if they give them all the stuff that was slated to come out when they haven't been open for 3 months and they had no cash flow. And I can understand that and I respect it, but at the same time, it's so weird. It's just odd.
It is. It's going to take a little while for things to normalize. It's good to get stories going again, but it did really reinforce for me how chapter of story these comics are versus episode of TV series they are.
Yeah.
And it really did not benefit a number of the comics I read.
It really didn't because, especially like if you picked up an issue or you received an issue that came out and it's picking up on, you know, on issue 3 or 4 of an arc that came out 2.5 or 3 months ago, I literally can't remember what was going on in some of these books. Some of them I could, which spoke volumes to me. I'm like, oh, this must have been something I really liked if I'm remembering exactly where it left off. And other ones I'm like, man, I don't know, remember what's going on. And it kind of took me out of the story. And I'm like, they used to be able to write books back when we were young that you could jump in there and you could kind of figure out what's going on. But they don't do that anymore with modern comics. And it's really hard. So with that stoppage, it just leaves you frustrated a little bit.
Well, Sam and I talked about that a little last week with Secret Wars, how in one of, I think it was the second issue, Doom was kind of thinking back on the events of the last few hours and half the page was, here's what happened in the first issue.
Yeah. They're trying to catch people up who didn't get that.
They had to. And they just don't do that these days.
And it's really unfortunate, but I understand it, but it's unfortunate. And then you question yourself, or sometimes people question, why do they keep doing a number one? Why do they keep rebooting? And I think it's because we've been programmed. If you get in an issue 43, you're going to have no clue what's going on. You're just going to be lost.
Funny you mention that because it was issue 41 of Teen Titans. I'm like, yeah, this is the finale of the story, and it fell a little flat.
Me too. I was like, what's going on? I'm like, all right, I don't need to read this anymore. I mean, I hate to say that, but that's one of the ones I cut anyway. So I'm like, I don't need to read that anymore. It's just not doing it. And it's frustrating. So, and I was left with some frustration. I was left with some happiness that I do have comics again. And mm-hmm. I was also happy that I'm not overwhelmed right now, that they are spacing it out, because I needed that adjustment, and Marvel and DC are adjusting for me in my life. And then I did some cutbacks on the amount I'm ordering, to where not insane levels, but a good amount, to where I'm going to be comfortable and I can read, you know, 3 or 4 issues a day, or a couple, and not be left behind.
Yeah, I'm liking kind of the level I'm getting, and it allows me to take another 7 issues to go read, you know, Red Team or something this week.
Yeah, before I would have been reading like a crazed person, and like almost like in a crunch to read the 7 issues of Red Team and also read the 40 comics that came in. And I didn't have to do that, and it's kind of refreshing for me that I'm able to breathe, you know, and just enjoy the book.
Yeah, I just, as I'm going through previews every month, need to be taking a closer look at, okay, what am I getting? Why am I getting it? Does this really deserve a spot on my reading list? And just kind of focus in a little on what's working for me and why.
Yeah. Do you feel like, I mean, you already kind of pulled back. Did you get the habit broken a little bit? I mean, I felt like I did, and it was only 2.5 months, roughly.
It was 7 weeks of no comics.
7 weeks, okay.
And yeah, definitely, because, you know, I would normally spend, you know, time reading during the week that it's like didn't have new stuff. I mean, I'd read a couple issues of Doomsday Clock or a hardcover or two. So I was still reading comics, but no new comics for that long was weird.
It was weird. I felt like I filled the time, you know, I played some video games, I read a lot of hardcovers and trade paperbacks that I had stacked up, and then I didn't feel like I missed them that much, but at the same time, it was kind of cool to get new comics again. Mm-hmm. But I didn't have that sense of loss either, which was weird.
I think
I just had I had a weird feeling.
Yeah, and part of it for me is doing all these back issue spotlights. When I hit something like Red Team that's just so well done, or, you know, like Secret Wars that hit some of the nostalgia buttons for me, or something like that, you know, it really makes me realize there are some comics I just really enjoy a lot more than others.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And I enjoy almost every comic I read for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes it's just the learning experience on how a story could have been told better.
Learning what you do and do not like.
Yeah, which is a sad thing to say, but it happens from time to time.
It does.
You know, but there are some titles where it's like, yeah, I'm going to keep getting it, and there are others, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, that's the same way I felt. And I'm not, you know, doom and gloom. I'm not going to cut all my stuff. I'm not like that. But I am going to curtail what I read and try to get it down to really what I really enjoy. And like I said, Marvel and DC have done some of that for us, especially Marvel. They got rid of a lot of the miniseries, the 5-issue things that they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, were frustrating for some of them that were in the middle, but at the same time, I was like, it's good that they did that. And there are things that just I felt like were okay. I don't feel like I need to waste time on okay. I'd rather read things that are good, that I'm really enjoying. And if I'm really not enjoying something, I don't think I'll have any problem getting rid of it now.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm the same way. If I'm liking it, I'll keep it. If I'm not, I'll cut it. And I just need to be a little more careful on what I allow into my pull list.
Yeah, that's the big thing. Don't allow everything in.
Just make sure, you know, make sure I know why I'm getting it, not just, hey, that looks interesting, and or what the hell, why not?
Yeah, because I used to do a lot of, that's a cool cover. Maybe that sounds like a cool premise. Have no clue who this writer is. Have no, I can't really, you know, gamble like that. If it's really good, I'll read a collected edition later on.
Yeah. Because, again, I've realized that there are other ways I can be spending my time.
Yeah.
You know, I've gotten a couple of books read during that break. I've got probably 20 or 30 books on writing comics and stuff like that I may read at some point. Plus, I've just got this huge pile of both back issues and trades and hardcovers to go through at some point. And yeah, other ways I want to spend my time.
Yeah, me too. Actually, my wife and I got into the craze. Everyone bought bicycles, apparently. But they actually put in a bike trail right behind my house. So picking up some bikes and spend some time bike riding together, you know, just enjoying each other.
Well, I gotta say, one thing that's on my list to read through, and I just need to figure out the right plan for it, and it was based on Billy Hogan, who sent in a ton of clips for the the recommendation roundtable.
Yeah.
One of the things, and I forget if I put it in episode 2 or if I held it for episode 3. So if it's for 3 and I'm spoiling it, listen to the clip anyways. It was a really good one. It was on Astro City.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's like, yeah, I gotta reread all that stuff.
I gotta reread it too. I have it all in trades.
It's 100 and some odd issues. That would be one. It would be a huge endeavor, but it'd be fun to do some back issue spotlights on.
I agree. Yeah, you could literally start anywhere in there. Pick up trade 6. Who cares?
I'll be honest. I would almost start at the beginning, and the one place I would think about deviating is when it hits the Dark Age.
Oh, yeah, because you told me you didn't enjoy that.
I need to reread it to give it another shake, but part of it was it focused too much on certain characters, and I liked the aspect of Astro City where it's just every other issue it seems like you're just diving into a different corner of the universe.
That's the only one I didn't pick up, the Dark Age, because you told me it wasn't that great, but I picked up everything else in trades and I read it and I enjoyed it. And I am still kind of surprised that they never come out with a like an omnibus edition, you know, some big oversized hardcover, because it's good material.
It's great material.
Yeah, and I'm just surprised. I'm expecting it to happen one day, but it still hasn't happened.
Definitely missed opportunity.
I agree.
So, let's see, coming up, obviously with the recommendation roundtable, there are no deadlines on that. The basic gist is send in a pick for whatever comic, novel, television show, movie, video game, or hobby, or however you think fellow listeners might want to spend their time. Because let's face it, some of us are still spending a lot of time at home these days.
Yeah.
Give us some ideas. When I get enough for an episode, I'll release it. Basically around 45 minutes to an hour is what I'm determining to be enough. So when Billy Hogan of the Superman Fan Podcast, definitely go check that out, delivered, I think it was like an hour and 45 minutes worth of clips.
I'm like, there's an episode.
There's two.
Yeah, exactly.
And he had some great stuff.
Oh, okay. Cool, cool.
So definitely, like I said, I've got the first one of those up. I've got the other one edited. I'm probably going to wait a few weeks to get the other one up just to, you know, space them out a little bit. But then, you know, I'm back to having no new clips. So when I get enough, I'll put together a fourth or whatever. Previews, the July 2020 previews should be out on June 24th. That means the deadline is going to be Saturday morning, July 4th. And before anyone says, oh, it's July 4th, the deadline is the morning of. Not going to impact your fireworks, which are in the evening of. But that way it gives me time to edit the episode, get it up, people can listen to it, and it can actually influence what they pick or what they buy.
Cool.
So I think there's a ton of interesting things. I think we're in an odd point right now with the preview stuff of the publisher still figuring out when things are getting released, what they're rescheduling and all like that. But this is a time where you may determine if somebody stays on a title or not. So it's a good time to share your love of titles and support the ones you want to keep around.
Definitely. I always like listening to it, especially before I fill out my order form.
Yeah. Yeah. I usually have my order form open as I'm editing it. It's like, oh, I missed that one. I should put that down.
And Marvel's did have a trimmed down previews, but it was kind of nice seeing them in the main catalog again. It's been so long.
Yeah, I think they just did that this month.
Yeah.
Because it was just kind of an odd month. I also noticed four or five full page ads saying, yeah, Free Comic Book Day will happen. We're just not sure when.
Yeah, I noticed that.
I think it was a interesting time for the people who put together previews, because they had put together a May previews only for it not to happen, and then they kind of repurposed and rebuilt it into the May-June one. And it's a shame they missed a month, because they had an unbroken streak of delivering it on time every month for, 380 issues?
That's insane.
So hats off to them, and I appreciate the work they did both on the original version and the repurposed one, so glad to have it back.
I'm glad too. It was kind of nice getting it.
Yeah. Anything else? Are we good?
We're good.
Cool. Join us next week as Sam and I continue going through Secret Wars, covering issues 5 through 8, and then in 2 weeks as James and I go through the first 4 issues of Loving Capes.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.